It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And, you know, I've never done it this way, but we'll do it this way today. We'll welcome Janet Manco in first. Good morning, Janet.
Oh, my gosh. I'm stunned. Hello. Hello.
I know. You know, it just dawned on me. I've never, ever introduced you first. So.
Well, that's just fine. You know,
and publishers are quiet, right?
That's right, especially when they're on the phone, because you're looking at those lovely people who come into the studio, and they should come first.
All right, and so now we will bring in Cynthia and Ann. Good morning.
Did you think that we were chatting?
No. As a matter of fact, I saw the cats were the ones that cued me that you were here.
But it just came to my mind, you know, I don't know why we've been doing this. I've never introduced Janet.
Well, she does have seniority.
Well, thank you. Right.
It's more like switching things up. Marshall is in a... Ever since he discovered that our computer was actually being tomorrow instead of today.
I do that. I could be a computer.
Oh, boy, I tell you, it happens. I could really be a computer. But anyway, well, let's get to the journal, because there's lots of color. Even though there's lots of ice on the front page, there's lots of color.
It's very colorful. The ice is beautiful. We have these incredible drone photos from a student at Marvelwood School whose name I won't try to pronounce, but he goes by the name of Abel. And he'd been doing a drone project anyway, and had been asked by the town to send the drone out. And I got these incredible movies and beautiful close-ups. And it really, you know, not that everything is about food, but the ice chunks, when you look at them, look just like toffee. There's this, you know, beautiful glassy green ice topped with a little dusting of white, which actually now looks not quite as pretty. But
also some of his drone photos were so vivid and clear. I saw the HD ones where some of the ice, the huge chunks, which were 6 feet thick,
incredible.
When they were on their side,
yeah,
there's a bluish tint to them.
Yes.
It was just like, wow, these things are.
Yeah. It's art.
It is.
It's works of art. Yeah.
And it's so, the thing that, it's nature. It's pretty right. powerful.
What? When I first read that, because I was out of town last week, and I came back and I read the paper, and it said the ice is 12 feet thick, I was like, no, that's not right. It's got to be 12 inches. It's 12 feet.
No, it's...
Like, I didn't know the river was that
deep.
This
is literally a once-in-a-lifetime. When I was young, we had this, right under the old covered bridge in West Cornwall, there was an ice jam. And the reason the covered bridge is so high now is that the ice jam almost pushed the bridge off its moorings back then. That was back in the mid-50s.
Back
in the mid-50s.
Back when there was real water.
That shows how old I am.
Well, you know, that was 55. That was the time there was all that flooding. Mm-hmm. And so actually, Elise Sattler did a follow-up on what has been happening in the river and explains why it is that Kent, of all the towns, is the most prone to having these ice jams. And as of yesterday, Brian Oler and Bruce Adams, our state rep, Brian Oler and Bruce Adams, first selectman of Kent, had sent out an email saying, careful because now there's some flooding. I don't know if the flooding has stopped. I assume it has, because I haven't seen any more emails this morning saying it's flooding.
Route 7 still has some water on it, but it's a different type of flooding than what happened. There's no ice chunks coming out and on the road. And with your story, and I think anybody that sees this, I just want to say that the state getting that road back open the way they did, working in the dangerous conditions they worked in, was truly amazing.
Yes.
It was truly amazing.
And kudos to people for not going out and, apparently a few people went out in the first days of it, but kudos to people for not going out and creating rescue situations, because there's enough going on there. So all continue right. not to. And I was fascinated to know that the water, there's a gap between the top of the water and the bottom of the ice, and that's part of the reason why the ice is just sitting there. So as the river is rising, they're hoping that it's going to start melting the water and pushing the ice farther downstream.
And there's actually some portions of the river they found out that the ice actually went right to the
bottom
bed.
Wow.
Which is really problematic.
Yeah.
But they're handling it great.
And Cynthia, your point is absolutely well taken. Please stay home.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I get so mad that they had all the television reporters that go out there and they park there and they show, and it just gets people the other part of the state. Hey, let's go to Kent and look at the
ice. It's like with the waterfall. Right. Like, right. Oh, that waterfall looks so refreshing. Yeah. But no deer and bird rescues either, which has surprised me. Yeah.
All right, so we've got this story about the ice jam, but then once again, on the left-hand side of the page, I see three protesters that are mighty young.
Starting them off young, training them good. And I'm going to let Anne talk about that as we get into the paper, but we have Lance Christensen and the very talented and lovely Anne Day, who went to the protests in Kent and Salisbury, and we'll talk about that when we get inside. But speaking of that, Patrick Sullivan went to the talk by Judge William Kuntz and law professor Nadine Strossen about free speech. And it was a very interesting talk. It wasn't just like, we need free speech. It was very nuanced. And she explains, you know, as an attorney speaking to a judge based on her book, hate speech, and really, you know, that you can't just sort of call anything you don't like hate speech, because that becomes suppression of speech and it can be turned around both ways. Very, very interesting article, especially at a time like this.
And that it was packed. That presentation was packed.
Good. Yeah, good.
I like Bill Pond now heading up Noble Horizons.
And we didn't put any puns in the headline. Like
I was going to do something, but I didn't. I stopped myself.
See? Everybody's
it's just too easy. It's too low-hanging fruit. But I got a chance to meet him when I took the photograph on Monday, and already has a reputation there as being very jovial, very kind, and seems very excited to be there, and excited by the possibilities of working in a nonprofit situation where, as he said, really the emphasis is on the clients, the residents, and their comfort and their happiness and their well-being, which is a nice thing to hear.
All right. And then A History Notebook by Bernie Drew.
So I just want to throw a shout-out to Bernie Drew, who's on, WAMC.
That's right.
Today at 1 p.m. in conversation with Alan Chartok, talking about Mount Greylock, where I believe, Janet, I think you know actually what...
He actually is talking... They had originally planned to do just Mount Greylock, but once they started planning it, they realized Bernie has written more than 100 books on the history of this region, and so they ended up having a discussion about the many books he has written and the deep knowledge he has of history. As far as I understand it, cannot wait to hear it.
Yes, and if you miss the live broadcast, well, the live taped broadcast, excuse me, when you can go to your podcast store and download WAMC In Conversation With, and you can hear it.
All right.
But this column for the Lakeville Journal, which of course is very interesting, is about the Allen family. I think we've all heard of Ethan Allen and the eponymous furniture store, but there was a bunch of Allens, and they were all quite rowdy. And Bernie describes them as like the Marx brothers. You know some of them. They're famous, but who really knows anything about Gummo and Zeppo?
All right. I want to go inside now. And now, Anne, it's your time to rise and be heard early in the show today.
That's right.
Because
she wrote a beautiful
story. You get the story on the women, men, and children that were out protesting.
Yes, we... I'm not great at counting crowds, although I've had plenty of experience trying to do it. I'm going to guess there were about 200 people. I heard some smaller estimates and some larger estimates, but the people that normally stand out on the White Hart Green saying, "We stand for peace and justice," were joined by about 200 more people carrying signs. And I was very happy that most of the signs were not incendiary or... I never really like to see those stupid ones with the Cheetos and things, because I don't think they're useful. So we had a lot that said, you know, "We stand against hate and love Trump's hate and we demand a better world," and stuff that wasn't directly at the president. But in any case, it was a small march that marched from the White Hart to Town Hall, and then everyone stood on the steps of Town Hall and had their picture taken, and there were a few chants, and that was about it. And you can read the story for the rest of it, and there are a lot of pictures of different protesters.
And Lance Christensen covered the one in Kent, and I just want to say that Ann Day last year went to the one in Washington, D.C. and got us incredible photos.
I was going to say, you know what I love about this particular protest, even in its second incarnation 1 year later, is, you see the pictures of it in the different cities of the literally hundreds of thousands of people, okay? But I really love also seeing the candid shots that are in the various newspapers of the people, like from here, going down on the train, people traveling distances to get there and doing it together. I just think that's what the soapbox protest, when you get on your soapbox, was what this country was founded on.
Right, and that's, you know, the great quote that Lance Christensen got, which is, "This is what democracy looks like."
Yeah.
That kind of sums up.
And it's just great to see people get together, not only do it locally, but then take the local feelings and mix in with in the big cities.
Yeah,
it just makes you feel that's what the country is all about.
It's so groovy now. People are finally getting together.
Just don't sing the next line. Okay. Speaking about protests, there's the other side on page A4. The show goes on in D.C.
Well, and actually, this is an interesting show that's completely different, which is Dr. Martin Nguia, your neighbor here in Sharon, has a show at the that continues at the Smithsonian of his research into narwhals. And so we did a sidebar interview with him about what to wear when it's really, really cold out, because here's a man who spent some time in temperatures that make it feel fairly toasty here. So we have an interview from him on the best coat, the best glasses, the best boots to wear. Very interesting and very useful on this 19-degree day. And then we had Alicia Magazzi, who did an introduction of a show of work by her grandfather, Charles Bisazzi, who I'm going to assume is the father of Duke Bisazzi, the wood duck carver, and also the guy who's got a very interesting business making ship's timbers. And so there's a show at the Cornwall Congregational Church honoring Black History Month, which is fantastic.
All right. Now, the next show I want to talk about, I want to give Fred Baumgarten a little little space here, too.
Oh, yeah.
Jenny Hansel just was amazing what she did with the Northeast Community Center and all the programs she added. But her husband, Fred, also added so much to our area as well. They both, as a couple, added so much to this area and did so much to inform and enlighten people. It's hard to replace people like that.
Yes, and I'm going to just quickly say Jenny Hansel, who lives here in Sharon, they're moving up to Northampton. She'll be working for the Berkshire Natural Resources Council. Fred has taken a job in Mount Holyoke. But Anne, do you want to talk about Fred and Jenny continuing to write for you?
Yes, both Fred and Jenny have said that they would still love to write for us. They're not going to be able to do as many local things, but I know Jenny wants to continue writing about dance, and she's working in Pittsfield, so she'll have access to things up in Lenox and Stockbridge and places like that that she'll write about. And Fred, who's written when we get to Compass, I can tell you, Fred's written a fabulous preview of Tosca, which is at the movie house on Saturday.
All right. Well, they're going to be missed, that's all I can say. And I don't know what they did with all their books.
There's a giant dumpster outside the house right now. I know. They're giving their books away. They went on the Northwest Corner chat page on Facebook.
It's absolutely amazing. Yeah. Nice story about, and we counted them here. There's been a dozen snowstorms already.
Oh, that's right. In Cornwall, they had a meeting where they said, everybody's still doing okay with their snow budgets. But, of course, it doesn't seem like a dozen, but it's been a dozen.
About 35 inches of snow so far.
It's been a real winter this year. Also in Winsted, we have two stories. We have one about their finances. It was a rough period that they went through in that town, and they seem to be emerging from it. And we'll fully support and hope that they do better, because here in the Northwest Corner, even though maybe we don't all go there all the time, Winsted is important to us and does impact our life here in our six towns. And then the co-op, there's still delays at the Edgeworks. There's some paperwork issues going on. But the co-op, which is there and replacing the grocery store that had closed, still signing people up. They had 100 members in their first 7 months. And I think any of us who's ever tried to sign anybody up for anything knows 100 people in 7 months is pretty good.
On the Our Towns A6, I love the headline because it really is true. Ice jams and state spending caps.
It's all jammed up, yeah. So the state legislature is about to come back into session. Patrick Sullivan is doing a story on it for next week, if he's able to get hold of all the legislators. We know where to find Brian Oler, of course. He's down in Kent. But a meeting of the selectmen in Kent, and they talked not only about, and the Board of Finance talked not only about the ice and the way it's moving, hopefully down the river, but also Treasurer Barbara Herbst came and reported something that we'll all be talking about soon, which is the spending cap that's been placed by the state on the town, saying you can't increase your spending by more than 2.5%, which is, you sort of see where they're coming, but that's going to be tough. Also in Winsted, the Bank of America has offered to donate a building to the town, and you can kind of read between the lines the town manager kind of saying, let's not get too overwrought about this. Let's just say yes, because this is going to be great for the town. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually just accept it and push it through, because, of course, owning a building is always complex, or if they sort of really, get into the weeds on it, as often happens.
Well, if they accept the building, you can always turn around and re-commercialize it as a town, give incentives for other businesses to move in and stuff like that. Or maybe even Ralph Nader can start something else.
Museum Annex. That's right.
Because he's just, such a believer in Winsted, and what he does is just, to me, absolutely amazing. The man is forever young.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking about forever young, Peter Vermillier.
Isn't that a nice photo of him, too? So Peter Vermillier has been writing these interesting little books and just so energetically promoting them in the area. And he gave a talk at the Exchange Club and Salisbury Rotary on January 16th. And we love covering his talks because he always brings up some interesting stories about the area. His last book was about witches and unsavory folk and some very nice, interesting witch stories, which are interesting all year round, not just Halloween.
I like the story by Patrick Sullivan on the state Supreme Court where funding for schools and the court did not side with the state of Connecticut.
Right. And, you know, this is a big story, but we put it inside just because it's so up in the air right now. So a judge had originally said, all you towns in the state, you need to go back and rejigger how you fund education. And it's not, and it's endlessly complex how all towns, how states in America fund education and what they consider to be the minimum amount of required education. For some states, all you have to be able to do is read the Bible and the Constitution. In some states, they want you to be able to balance a checkbook. But it's different for every state. What's required is the minimum. So the state Supreme Court overturned that original ruling and said it's going back to the state assembly this month, but it's such a complicated issue. The state ECS funding, which goes to the schools, the formula for it is so complicated that I think there's nobody actually who can explain how it exactly works. But they're going to be looking at it again, and the judge called it irrational and unconstitutional.
You know, as someone who lived in the Hudson Valley for many years, I've been keenly aware of Claremont, and it was great to see a presentation at the Scoville Library.
Right, and you know, the Livingstons are still a local family. Isabella Livingston used to live in Falls Village at a certain point. She's still very present. The family's very present. But a talk as part of the Era of Elegance talks, which Patrick loves. Patrick, who's so cynical, loves those talks, and a nice little write-up on it. One of the houses that's been allowed to remain fairly intact.
All right, and you've got a little sports section here, but the Swassa Winter Warmer is coming up February 3rd at the Rand's house.
And, of course, the Swassa Jumps themselves are coming up the following weekend. And we'll hope that the weather has warmed up a little bit and that there's a little bit of snow. And we have over at the Lakeville Journal hard at work today. Janet can talk about it if she would like. We're putting together the program right now for Jump Fest.
That's right, the 48-page program that the Journal works on with the board at Salisbury Winter Sports Association every year, and it's a lot of fun, and it gets everybody in the mood to watch some ski jumping. It's great, so stop by if you're in Falls Village.
When we talk about the ski jumps, my way down at 3:30 this morning when I left my house to come into work, I always shake my head, there the lights were on, and they were making snow and grooming snow.
Yeah, they work so hard.
These volunteers are the most amazing volunteers for any organization you'll ever see. It really is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. And, you know, read through that program carefully. It gives so much of the history and so much of what makes this event and this group who puts it all together, which is just about everybody in town, so special. So read that program, and it'll learn about them if you're not familiar with it.
And when you think back to the history, it all started with some people moving into the area billions of years ago and putting skis on and going off the roof of a barn.
Yeah.
That led to the start of the Salisbury ski jumps. It's absolutely amazing. Let's go on to the opinion page, your editorial, Winstead Needs to Fund School Building Upkeep.
Right. You know, we were just talking about Bank of America offering to donate a building to the town of Winstead. And Winstead got burned a bit when in 2002 they accepted the Lambert K building for a $1 purchase. And it's been a long slog trying to find a way to use that building. So, you know, towns have to be very careful about how they plan and to spend their money. And Winstead is careful, and that's understandable. But keeping the infrastructure of the schools up to date and safe for students and teachers and all those who use the buildings is of the utmost importance. And we're making the case here that now is the time for the town to look at the needs there and budget some money for it. It's a tight time for any state money. We explain why that's not really going to be much help. So read the editorial, but it's a problem that all of our schools deal with, and Winstead should put some money toward this.
All right. And, of course, you have lots of letters this week, but my two favorite things, Mark Godburn, Why Men Won't Ask for Directions, and then also the Age of Arrogance, Part 2.
That's right. We have Tom Shackman writing about his Age of Arrogance series. It's been so interesting because he just seemed to key into something in our society right now that every time we have something happen, he is able to comment on it. And so in this segment, he's talking about Harvey Weinstein and all these other celebrities who have been called out by the Me Too movement and have behaved badly. And so he talks about that, and it's fascinating. And Mark Godburn's column is very funny, and so do not miss that. Why Men Won't Ask for Directions. He really gives us an analysis on that as well. And Dick Ollis has a great column on remembering Katharine Graham and Ben Bradley. And for anyone who's seen The Post and just sort of gotten into that era again, Dick knew them and worked for The Post company, and he explains some experiences he had with them.
All right, and now it's on to Compass.
We have a lot packed into our two little pages this week. We have Leon Graham, who really just overworked himself. He reviewed the Camera Club show, which is at Noble. It's their annual exhibit, and it seems to be the year of the drone. He was most excited by Brian Wilcox's drone pictures. He liked other pictures in the show, but he loved these drone pictures, which are printed on metal and are quite beautiful. He also reviewed Daniel Day-Lewis's last film, The Phantom Thread, or Daniel Day-Lewis says it's his last film. And you can read all about that. I won't give any, spoiler alerts away. Now, a movie that I haven't seen, but because of Leon's review, I am definitely going to see, is Paddington 2. It is the number one movie on Rotten Tomatoes. It's gotten the top spot of the best reviewed movie ever on Rotten Tomatoes. And just because it's a children's movie doesn't mean that it's not full of allegory and political implications. And Leon loved it, and he made me want to go see it. We've also got a wonderful primer by Fred Baumgartner about Puccini, and specifically about Tosca, which is going to be at the movie house on Saturday. And he kind of just guides people through the story and what to look for if you're not an opera fan already. So I'm looking forward to seeing Tosca on Saturday. The Joint Chiefs, our beloved local rock and roll band, have released a CD, and they're having a big party to celebrate that on February 2nd at Infinity Hall. And a band called the Carlines will be opening the show. The Carlines are from Eastern Connecticut. So make sure to get your tickets online for the Joint Chiefs CD party called Sending Up a Flare. There's also a show of Taryn Nugent, who graduated from Housatonic Valley Regional High School in 2009, and she will be exhibiting her work starting today in the high school gallery called Two Walls Gallery. And that's about all I have for today.
Tara, I like to say that Tara graduated in the class of '09.
'09, sorry.
And the gallery is in, that gallery, by the way, is in the library at Housatonic Valley Regional High School.
Thank you.
Don't miss it. And we also have calendar, and we also have Tri-Corner Real Estate in the papers this week.
And I want to just put one more plug in. There's two openings tonight for that for Tara's show. One from 2 to 4.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
And one from 5 to 7.
That's right.
And there's refreshments, so we know people will show up.
Yeah.
And the 2 to 4 one I thought was mainly for the students, but I'm actually going to the 2 to 4 one. So I think anybody can go.
All right. Now, just one funny thing. When I opened up the real estate section, I saw two houses, one for $119,000 and one for $154,000 and another $130,000. So I said, where are those houses? They're in Torrington, but there's actually one in Kent that's right next to it. But those are, folks, if you want to invest in housing, I mean, that's the down payment in a house around here.
Yeah, now's the time. And, you know, we talk about affordable housing a lot, and you'd have to look for it, and we're happy that the realtors are finding it for us.
All right. Well, that is it.
Thank you so much.
Stay warm, and we'll speak to you guys next week.
See you next week.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robinhood Radio. The Lakeville Journal is available. TriCornerNews.com. That is TriCornerNews.com. Also on Facebook.